Chapter 13. Wizards and technology don't get on so well, and that makes travel sort of complicated. Some wizards seem to be more of a bad influence on technology than others, and if any of them were harder on machinery than me, I hadn't met them yet. I've been on a jet a couple of times and had one bad experience, just one. After the plane's computers and guidance system went bad, and we had to make an emergency landing on a tiny commercial airfield, I wasn't eager to repeat the experience. Buses were better, especially if you sat toward the back, but even they had problems. I hadn't been on a bus trip longer than 300 or 400 miles without winding up broken down next to the highway in the middle of nowhere. Cars could work out, especially if they were fairly old models. The fewer electronics involved, the better. Even those machines, though, tended to provide you with chronic problems. I'd never owned a car that ran more than maybe 9 days in 10, and most of them were worse than that. Trains and ships were the ideal, especially if you could keep yourself a good way from the engines. Most wizards, when they traveled, stuck with ships and trains. Either that or they cheated, like I was about to do. Back at the beginning of the war with the vampire courts, the White Council, with the help of a certain wizard private investigator from Chicago, who shall remain nameless, negotiated the use of ways through the near reaches of the Never Never, controlled by the Unseelie Court. The Never Never, the world of ghosts and spirits and fantastic beings of every description, exists alongside our own mortal reality, but it isn't the same shape. That meant that in places, the mortal world touched upon the Never Never at two points that could be very close together, while in the mortal realm, they were very far apart. In short, use of the ways meant that anyone who could open a path between worlds could use a major shortcut. In this case, it meant I could make the trip from Chicago, Illinois, to Edinburgh, Scotland, in about half an hour. The closest entry point to where I wanted to go in the Never Never was a dark alley behind a building that had once been used for meat packing. A lot of things had died in that building, not all of them cleanly, and not all of them cows. There's a dark sense of finality to the place, a sort of ephemeral quality of dread that hangs so lightly on the air that the unobservant might not notice it at all. In the middle of the alley, a concrete staircase led down to a door that was held shut with both boards and chains. Talk about overkill. I walked down the steps to the bottom of the stairs, closed my eyes for a moment, and extended my otherworldly senses, not toward the door, but toward the section of concrete beside it. I could feel the thinness of the world there, where energy pulsed and hummed just beneath the seemingly rigid surface of reality. It was a hot night in Chicago, but it wouldn't be on the ways. I wore a long-sleeved shirt and jeans and a couple of pairs of socks beneath my hiking shoes. My heavy leather duster had me sweating. I gathered up my will, reached out my hand, and with a whisper of Aperturum, I opened a way between worlds. Honestly, it sounds quite a bit more dramatic than it looks. The surface of the concrete wall rippled with a quick flickering of color and began to put out a soft glow. I took a deep breath, gripped my staff in both hands, and stepped directly forward into the concrete. My flesh passed through what should have been stone, and I emerged in a dark wood that lay covered in frost and a thin layer of snow. At least this time, the ground in Chicago had been more or less level with the ground in the Never Never. Last time, I'd had a 3-inch drop I hadn't expected, and I'd fallen on my ass into the snow. No harm done, I suppose, but this part of the Never Never was just chock full of things you did not want to think you were clumsy or vulnerable. I took my bearings with a quick look around. The woods were the same, all 3 times I'd been through them. A hillside sank down ahead of me and climbed steadily into the night behind me. At the top of the mountain I stood upon, I was told, was a narrow and bitterly cold pass that led into the interior of the Unseelie Mountains, to Mab's stronghold of Arctis Tor. Below me, the land sank into foothills and then into plains, where Mab's authority ended and that of Titania, the Summer Queen, began. I stood at a crossroads, which was only sensible since I'd arrived from Chicago, one of the great crossroads of the world. One trail led upslope and down. The other crossed it at almost perfectly right angles and ran along the face of the hillside. I took a left following the face of the hillside in a counterclockwise direction, also known as Widdershins in the parlance of the locals. The trail ran between frozen trees, their branches bowed beneath their burden of frost and snow. I moved quickly, but not quickly enough to slip and blow out an ankle or brain myself on a low-hanging branch. The White Council had Mab's permission to move through the woods, but they were by no means safe. I found that out for myself about 15 minutes into my walk, when snow suddenly fell softly from the trees all around, and silent black shapes descended to encircle me. It happened quickly and in perfect silence. Maybe a dozen spiders the size of ponies alit upon the frozen ground or clung to the trunks and branches of the surrounding trees. They were smooth-surfaced, sharp-edged creatures, like orb weavers, long-limbed and graceful and deadly-looking. They moved with an almost delicate precision, their bodies of a color of gray and blue and white that blended flawlessly with the snowy night.